Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk here. I'm a postdoc now, but I'm going to present work that I did during my PhD working with Scott Fundorf. So I'm looking at arsenic cycling, and in the background you see the Himalayas, just to give people a background since I'm the first arsenic talk in this session. There's a massive poisoning of people drinking arsenic-containing water, and that's kind of one of the backgrounds for why we care about naturally occurring arsenic. And in Southeast Asia and South Asia, the source of arsenic in their groundwater is actually arsenic-bearing minerals coming from the Himalayas that are transported and then deposited in the deltas below, and millions of people are now drinking arsenic-contaminated water. And so that's the background of why we should care. And what I'm going to look at is this naturally occurring arsenic can be deposited into soil matrices, which in this schematic diagram you can see most soils are, on the left you see a soil profile, and they're composed of aggregates. And as we zoom in, we can see that between aggregates we have advective flow, and then into the aggregate we have diffusive flow. And so we can think that the water that is flowing around the aggregates when they're containing O2, it forms an oxidizing condition on the outside, and this O2 can diffuse into the center of these aggregates. And this forms an oxidizing outer layer versus a reducing inner layer when you have microbial activity on the inside. And the outside, when it's oxidizing, you can have formation of manganese oxides, which are very strong oxidants of many trace metals, including arsenic. And on the interior, you can have a reducing condition, like I mentioned, because of metals and metal-reducing microbes, dissimulatory metal-reducing microbes. And they use organic carbon as an electron donor to reduce many metals, including manganese, iron, and including arsenic. And so what I'm going to talk about are the interfaces of this, these two reducing and oxidizing zones within an aggregate within a synthetic system. So first I'll talk about the competitive redox processes at the interface of those reduction and oxidation zones. And then afterwards, when we have oxidation, how is the arsenic distributed within this matrix that is made of iron and manganese oxides? And first we'll start with the competitive redox processes, where, just to remind you, we want to simulate an aggregate which is diffusion limited. And so to do that, we use Donen cell. And I've mentioned this, some of this before in previous presentations, and so I'm going to emphasize some reactive transport modeling results afterwards. So the Donen cell is made of two cells with a semi-permeable membrane in the middle, and the key idea is that some species can move in between the semi-permeable membrane, such as aqueous species like arsenic, and then the other solids remain in their respective chambers. So in these two chambers, we're going to put bernicite on the left as our oxidant, the manganese oxide, synthetic manganese oxide, and then on the right, we're going to put Shewanella, which is dissimulatory metal-reducing bacteria. And specifically in this case, we care that they can reduce arsenic-5. And so that's how our setup will look. And what we predict what happened is, as we dope in arsenic-3, we get oxidation of arsenic-3 to 5 by the manganese oxides on the chamber to the left. And this arsenic-5 that's produced can then diffuse through the semi-permeable membrane to the right side, and the arsenic-5 reducing microbes, in this case we use Shewanella and A3, are able to re-reduce it back to arsenic-3, forming this redox loop. And this is what the actual reactor looks like, made of PVC. And our semi-permeable membrane in the middle is 0.1 micron polycarbonate filter. And on the two sides, we put in the bernasite mixture, and then on the right side, we have the Schuonella culture. And then we dope in arsenic 3 at the top to initiate the reactor. And the results for the aqueous phase for the arsenic dynamics is that in red is the concentration of arsenic 5, and in blue is the concentration of arsenic 3 in the aqueous phase of each chamber. And in the chamber that has bernasite, we see that over time we have a sharp increase in arsenic 5, and then we notice a decrease in the concentration of arsenic 5. And so we're interested in why this was. And if we look at the manganese and carbon interactions, we can figure it out, where in the oxidation of arsenic 3 with manganese oxides, we form manganese 2. And sure enough, we detected that in the aqueous phase and with increasing concentrations over time. But remembering that we use lactate as our carbon source for the Schuonella, and that releases carbonate. And the carbonate can combine with manganese 2 to form rhodochrosite. And we actually detected this by doing XRD on the solids that were left in the bernasite chamber and saw rhodochrosite signal. So with that, we concluded that with the oxidation of arsenic 3 to 5, we formed the manganese 2, and then again the re-reduction of arsenic 5 to 3 produces carbonate from the oxidation of lactate. Then we form the rhodochrosite, which can then semi-coat the bernasite because we actually had solids left in the reactor, and that's what we did the XRD on. That is probably inhibiting the further oxidation, therefore the decrease in arsenic 5 in our aqueous phase in the bernasite chamber. And so we took all of this experimental information and calibrated the information in a reactive transport model by using Min3P, which was created by Uli Meyer. And the way we did it was using a finite difference matrix that is composed of three cells. And the two cells are the bernasite and the Schuonella chamber. And in the middle, the third cell, which is the semi-permeable membrane. And notice that it's not exactly to scale. The middle cell will be extremely thin. And what we did was set a constant head so that there was no hydraulic gradient. And therefore, everything moving in between these two major cells on the outside are diffusion controlled. And so we have a biogeochemical conceptual model that was built by these, considering all of these reactions. And we took into account redox reactions such as, at the top we have arsenic 3 oxidation by manganese. And then we took into account the rate of bacterial respiration, which was the arsenic 5 reduction in combination with lactate oxidation. And then for sorption desorption, we just took the simple reversible equilibrium equation from Zombach and Morel. And then for mineral precipitation, we allowed rhodochrosite to form when manganese 2 and carbonate reached saturation, and that formed our inhibition term for arsenic oxidation. And so when we take all of these into account and put them into Min3P, we are able to do some predictive modeling on what would happen when we lowered the carbon concentration. So when we lower our lactate concentration, we decrease the food for the Schuonella, which then gives you lower amount of electron donor, so therefore higher arsenic 5, and then also decreases, therefore, the amount of carbonate that's formed, and so that lowers the saturation index of the rhodochrosite. And so we see that at 3 millimolar lactate, which is the which are the conditions that we use during the experiment, we have arsenic 5 decreasing over time and arsenic 3 increasing, as we saw in the experiment. But then when we decrease our lactate, we see that arsenic 5, it starts to increase because of the decrease in rhodochrosite formation. And then sure enough, when we lower it another order of magnitude, we have arsenic 5 taking over in both chambers because of the decrease in food for the bacteria on this side also lowers the amount of reduction that we see. And then if we completely take out the inhibition term, we see that there's complete oxidation of arsenic on the bernicite side, and then complete reduction on the Shigella side when we give it plenty of food. So then, now that we know how the redox cycling will happen with the arsenic, we can look at how sorption might look in a manganese oxide and iron oxide matrix. And again, we use the same system of a donut cell, and instead this time we have bernicite on the left and goethite on the right. And we dope in arsenic 3. And we saw from the last portion that the arsenic 3 is oxidized to arsenic 5. And this arsenic 5, though, is then distributed between the two chambers. And there's no redox interaction with the goethite. In this case, everything was run anaerobically. And so we're interested in how the arsenic 5 distributes. And what we saw was that we did this at two different concentrations about an order of magnitude apart. And at the higher concentration, we had greater adsorption on the manganese oxide on the bernicite. And then at the lower concentration, we have greater concentrations of arsenic adsorbed onto the goethite. So we were interested in why this was. And to do this, oops, I'm sorry. So first, to just go over what we thought was happening with a conceptual diagram. We have the oxidation of arsenic 3 to 5 on the bernicite. And then we saw that the arsenic 5 at high concentrations adsorbs more onto the bernicite. Higher concentrations of arsenic is found on the bernicite. Whereas at low concentration, the arsenic 3 injected, we saw greater adsorption than the goethite. And what we thought was happening is surface coverage of the goethite. And so once the goethite is completely covered with arsenic from adsorption, we saw that no more arsenic 5 was able to adsorb, and therefore we saw an increase in the aqueous concentrations of arsenic. And so to show this, we again use the same reactive transport model with the same physical setup. And this time we took into account, the only redox we had to take into account was just the arsenic oxidation by bernicite, since we didn't have any reduction sources. And then for sorption desorption, we were able to capture the switch in the adsorption at high versus low concentrations by taking into account weak and strong sites on both the manganese and the iron oxides. And what happened was, after we calibrated the model, we could vary arsenic concentrations and the mass ratio between the bernicite and the goethite within the two chambers. And as we decreased bernicite and held the goethite mass the same, as expected, we had lower adsorption onto the bernicite phase as we kept decreasing it from 1 to 10 to 1 to 100 of goethite to bernicite. Of bernicite to goethite. And then, as you can see, the goethite remains about the same for the adsorption amount. But now, what we're interested in is the last concept that I mentioned, which is that if we have surface coverage, complete surface coverage of the goethite, then we have no more spaces for arsenic 5 adsorption. So you would expect the concentration of aqueous arsenic to increase. And so we tested this by holding this time, instead of decreasing the bernicite concentration, we decreased the goethite concentration and looked at the aqueous phase arsenic. Oh, I'm sorry. First, we looked at the solid phase arsenic that was adsorbed. And sure enough, when we lowered the goethite mass, we had a decrease in the concentration of arsenic adsorbed onto the goethite. And if we look at the change in the aqueous phase arsenic, when we had the initial goethite mass, we had about less than about 7 micromole per liter of arsenic left in the aqueous phase after we hit equilibrium. But then when we decreased goethite mass, then we had a sharp increase in the concentration of arsenic in the aqueous phase. So in summary, what's happening is when we have oxidants on the outside of the aggregate, we can have arsenic oxidation, and that oxidation can be variable depending on the amount of carbon source available in those micropores. And then this arsenic 5 can then absorb onto both manganese and iron oxides, but the actual amount of arsenic that we see in the aqueous phase that diffuses out is probably mostly dependent on the surface sites available on the iron oxides rather than the bernicite. And with that, I'd like to thank some people at Stanford and SSRL and ALS, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Samantha. Very colorful, very comprehensive presentation. Well done. We don't have time. Just one quick comment or question, please. Thank you very much. It's a great presentation. Well done. Thank you.